I will tell you that small marijuana, and this is getting to the point that I believe the governor made, small marijuana is not a priority here at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. We do not spend an inordinate amount of time stopping people for marijuana. In fact, I'll go further than that. None of our canines are trained to alert on marijuana. We haven't been for a couple of years. So we're not stopping cars and oh my gosh, there's marijuana, and we're going to put them in prison, as the governor alluded to. That's not happening.
So that was Sheriff Chip Simmons, of course, at the event where Governor Ron DeSantis came in on Friday and spoke with us, with Joe Latipo as well, in opposition to Amendment 3. As Sheriff Chip Simmons is saying, because of the advent of medical marijuana, they had to basically abandon having the dogs that would alert on marijuana, because the dog couldn't get you probable cause to search with a marijuana alert, because medical marijuana is legal inside the car, and you don't know whether it's the legal or the illegal kind when you're on the outside sniffing. And we're not putting people in jail for that either, a point that the governor made. Joining us now, we have a special opportunity. We're talking to Ricky Dixon. He is the Secretary of Corrections for the entire state of Florida, and he joins us now to talk about Amendment 3, among other things. Secretary Dixon, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Glad to be with you.
Hey, great to have you. So let's just start with the one that the governor said. The kind of the implication or the allegation is that we're throwing people in prison left and right because of minor possession amounts of marijuana, and we can free up all of this space and free up all the corrections officers and law enforcement activity if only we'll stop punishing people for under 3 ounces of marijuana. Is that true?
No, it's not true at all, and I'll go into that. If I could start, though, by saying, first of all, thank you for having me on the show, and I'd just like to give a shout-out to all the hardworking men and women in your area. I know we've got a lot of listeners that work in our prisons and various capacities in our community corrections offices, and just some of the hardest-working, most outstanding employees I've ever been around, and I appreciate what they do every day to keep the public safe. But as it relates to your question, I appreciate the chance to kind of dispel some of the myths that are out there around what you just alluded to, regarding the prison population being full of inmates for low-level marijuana charges. That's not true at all. We knew that. Governor DeSantis, actually, when we started getting into this earlier on, you know, asked that question, and we had our data and research arm look to see exactly what we do have in prison. And here's the facts as they relate to today. This is not rumors or misinformation. These are the facts. Today we have 87,678 individuals in our custody in our state prison system. Of that number I just shared, there are only 37 inmates that are in our custody for a primary offense of marijuana possession. However, that possession was over 20 grams, which constitutes a trafficking charge. Take it even further, of those 37 that are in prison with that primary charge, not one single one of those individuals are here for that charge alone. It's escalated or enhanced by either an extensive criminal record or severe accompanying crimes like grand theft, battery, child abuse, or possession of other illicit substances. So the myth that we're just full of inmates in here for low-level marijuana crimes is just not true.
So the idea that you would be saving prison space, saving corrections officers hours, or saving local law enforcement or, you know, state or county law enforcement, either, whatever, that's just a myth, at least from the state level. I know you don't oversee like the, you know, Escambia County Jail, Santa Rosa County Jail, but I think somebody might respond and ask the question, well, what about in the less than 1 year category? Are there prisoners who are in local jails for marijuana possession only?
Yeah, that's a fair question. There is a distinction between jails and prisons, and I'll say it this way. As it relates to the state prison system, if you said that we were going to release everyone today that's in charge or in prison, for a marijuana charge, we would be releasing zero inmates. Now, to your question, as it relates to the jails, and I don't supervise the jails, but I have close relationships with a large majority of the sheriffs in our state, and what I've learned from them is that they don't have an overly populated section of their jails filled up with these individuals either. That's just not commonly the reason people go to jail. If they are arrested, there's usually a citation, or they see the judge immediately and are released. Usually those inmates that would be in their jails are not there for marijuana possession, but also the crimes and the charges that accompany or go along with that. So probably statistically a few more than the state prison system perhaps, but that's not typically what causes someone to end up in even jail. unless they're accompanying crimes.
Yeah, and that's something that the governor pointed out, is that, you know, if they're involved in a driving high kind of charge or some kind of other, like you say, collateral crimes or, you know, trafficking amounts and things like that. And, you know, though the number may not be zero in your local jails, it's still low. And look, as the sheriff and both of our county sheriffs have explained this, that ever since medical marijuana, their ability to identify and find and prosecute for marijuana has changed because of the sniff laws and, you know, what they can't do. And so it makes sense that they're not out there actively pursuing that, because that's not even something that they have the mechanisms to enforce the same way anymore. Secretary Dixon, one last question on Amendment 3. If this were to pass and you had increased use of personal possession quantities of marijuana or recreational marijuana, how do you think that would change other behaviors, black markets, other criminal activity that goes along with it, incidents of, you know, driving high, things like that? If it does pass, how would that perhaps change your population, or from a corrections law enforcement perspective, how would that affect the state?
It's going to have such a negative impact on our state, Andrew, from just a public nuisance standpoint that we already deal with for various reasons. And I sure don't want to become like some of these other states that we go to and our cities and, you know, walk around having to smell that, the general public having to put up with that, either behavior from people that are impaired by that substance or the smell. It's clearly, this is corporate greed and just a poorly crafted amendment to benefit large corporations. It'll enhance the black market. It's just camouflage or a myth to say that this is going to stop the illicit drugs. They're going to undercut the price, and that's going to exacerbate that problem. I can tell you this, to tie it back to the prison system. I've been doing this for almost three decades, and I've spoken with thousands of inmates in my career, in small settings individually and in various ways in various prisons across our state. And a common theme for those with 2 years to serve, life sentences, or even moments before the death penalty is carried out in some cases, a common theme by those in our custody is the regret they feel because they fully understand the association that drug use had on the subsequent crimes that resulted in their prison outcomes. So it'll have a significant impact on our prison system. I wouldn't say that people come to prison because of marijuana. That's not true. I've dispelled that. But as a result from it, the consequences from drug use, yes, most of our inmates, or a large portion of them at least, will tell you there's an association with drug use, either being impaired, resulting in them going to prison, or their continued crime to support the drug habit. So there's a clear association.
So the gateway effect in your mind is clear, and that's from the conversations that you've had with
without
them.
Without a doubt.
Wow.
Without a doubt.
So I have an odd question that just comes to mind, because, you know, always thinking through the practical consequences of something. Everything I know about prisons and jails is from some talking to people and from some watching TV and movies. In TV and movies, inmates are always smoking, you know, and cigarettes are like a form of commerce within the prison or the jail system. And I don't know whether that's really true or not. I assume that it is true. But you tell me. But my thought is, if marijuana becomes legal, would that create a situation where you'd have inmates getting high the way they would smoke a cigarette? Does that happen in other states? Like, I just don't even know, and I've never thought about it.
Yeah, it would complicate our efforts to keep contraband out of the prison system. Now, in all fairness, we struggle with that now with every kind of contraband. It's
sure.
It is an issue in prisons across our country. There are a lot of ways to get contraband in, and we are always kind of working back and forth to stay ahead of that population in terms of getting various contraband in. For instance, drones is one of the biggest threats we have facing our system today.
Yeah.
These prisons were not built contemplating you know drones and dropping off contraband and things like that. But it will further complicate it for sure. It's not something that will be beneficial to our efforts to keep prisons safe.
Okay, all right, that's fair enough. Since I have you on the line, I did want to ask.
And there are no cigarettes, and there are no. There are no cigarettes in prisons, by the way, either.
Oh, okay.
And that's not permitted in our state.
Thank you. That's actually what I was curious about, that, because, again, you know, you watch TV and you think you know a thing, and then you find out, oh, that's totally wrong. So thank you. I appreciate that. One of the things that I have been talking about, I think as long as I have been here, for about 10 years, is, you know, going back a decade, the inadequate funding for your prison system from the state, the inadequacy shows up in infrastructure, decrepit and crumbling facilities, you know, understaffed because you don't pay people enough, or, you know, you're not funded to pay people enough to keep them interested in being a CO, corrections officer, you know, overcrowding, you know, sort of the whole panoply of things. And in my mind, the reason it's underfunded, chronically underfunded, is because it's not sexy to fund prisons. Everybody likes to open schools and build parks and, you know, make roads be nice. And nobody really, most citizens don't relish the thought of providing money to pay for COs and prisons. But they are our citizens. It is our obligation to take care of them. And certainly the workers, we need to take care of them. But I don't know where we are today. I know it has been a problem. Where do we stand today, in your opinion?
Well, I appreciate you asking that question. If I were talking to you 10 years ago, I would have had a different story to tell. But I can tell you this, thanks to our governor, Governor DeSantis, he and our legislature, they have been phenomenal in the last several years at providing the resources that we need to recover. We're not a system in crisis. We are a system in recovery because of their efforts. What I appreciate about the governor and our legislature is they realize that an investment in corrections is an investment in public safety. You know, I know there are competing interests with schools and other areas of our state that absolutely needs funding as well. And, you know, some may look at, well, an investment in the prison system is not where we want to put our money. But we're proud of the safety in Florida and it being a safe place to live and work. And the governor and others have such an understanding that part of that formula is to have a functioning prison system. So no complaints. They year after year, we've had some of the most significant pay raises in our history. In the last 3 years, an unbelievable amount of physical plant funding that has come our way, and the education dollars or the money needed to keep the prisons from being overly idle or to provide the activity needed to keep the prison safe has been phenomenal. So we're absolutely in recovery.
Oh, that's great to hear, because it had been such a persistent and unimproving problem for several years. And I'm glad to hear that that's been getting, and maybe that's why I haven't been hearing about it lately, is because it's been getting a lot better. So I appreciate that. Last thing for you.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, along with that, the staffing is recovering as you
great.
Expect. So that's a large part of the battle. So we've gone from about 6,000 positions down to around 1,000 now, so we're certainly recovering in that area as well.
Oh, that's excellent. That's openings across the state, right?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Last thing, and just kind of a quick one, we had two hurricanes recently. Helene, which, you know, definitely affected us, more affected North Carolina and other places, but obviously, you know, Milton, massive effects across the state of Florida. The effect on the prisons, people don't often think about this, the need or the ability or the inability to evacuate prisoners, but then how those storms affect the inmates, you know, flooding can be a problem. Just generally, there's all kinds of effects from these storms. How is the prison system, how was it affected from these two storms? How is it recovering? Or was it something we just kind of weathered the storm and no big deal?
The latter in this case, which is very, very surprising considering the intensity of the storms, but our prison system came through relatively well. You know, these prisons are some of the safest places in the counties. In a lot of cases, they're built with very high wind ratings. In certain circumstances, we do evacuate based on proximity to the coast and the direction of the storm. But in this storm, we came out very well. And what a nice result of that was, is it enabled us to help the citizenry and help the communities around. Under Governor DeSantis' executive order, we were able to get into these coastal towns and really help the communities and people who needed some, workforce to help. And I tell you this, even the population that helped with that effort and the staff got so much out of the opportunity to kind of give back and help these people in need.
Oh, that's a great note, especially the idea that if the staff isn't, taken up with thing A, then they're free or at least capable of doing thing B, which is helping others. Oh, that's wonderful. And I didn't know the answer, so I appreciate that. Ricky Dixon, he is the Secretary of Corrections for the state of Florida. Secretary, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you do. I know that your job is not maybe typically recognized, noticed, thanked for, but your folks do absolutely essential work. And I know I appreciate the work that's being done to provide for public safety and to take care of the inmates. Sir, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andrew.